Our next speaker, Dr. Tracy Hendricks, is Associate Professor, Vice Chair, Clinical Affairs, and co-leads the Digestive Health Service Line at the University of Virginia. She's going to talk to us about, where happened to our?
Fabulous.
Twists and turns.
All right. Thanks so much. And it's my pleasure to be bringing up the rear in the colorectal talks here. I'll be talking about volvulus and colon ischemia. I have no financial disclosures. So just some fun facts. Volvulus is one of the most ancient medical conditions described, going all the way back to 1550 BC. described treating volvulus with a 12-inch suppository and air insufflation. And originally, the term used to describe what we now know as volvulus was ileus. So it's been recognized for quite some time. It's very common in parts of the world where there's Chagas disease from the kissing bug here. In the U.S., it's relatively uncommon with equal incidence of cecal and sigmoid volvulus, accounting for about 10% of large bowel obstructions. Mostly in the U.S., it's due to redundant sigmoid colon on a narrow mesentery, and usually in the presence of colonic dysmotility or constipation. Whether or not the anatomic variance of the sigmoid colon causes the constipation or other way around is a chicken or the egg phenomenon, but that's usually what you find. Generally, with sigmoid colon, as we all know, the patients are generally older, male, oftentimes institutionalized. You can have younger patients with developmental delay, and they oftentimes have recurrent attacks. Now, the majority of sigmoid volvulus is insidious in onset. So usually, unless there's a 360-degree turn, you don't have ischemia. And oftentimes, the patients present with obstipation for about 3 or 4 days and profound swelling here. And as you can see here, this is the classic x-ray findings with the bent inner tube. You have the pictorial description on the right there that shows what actually is leading to that graphic representation. With regard to evaluation in the middle of the night, the CT scan is the easiest to obtain. Of course, a contrast enema could also be obtained. However, you have to call a team in, and so a CT scan really is the easiest. On CT and the gastrograph and enema, you can see the bird's beak appearance there. And then I have a little video, if we can get this to work. It's a little bit wonky, it stretches out, but it shows this nice swirl pattern that's very classic with a volvulus due to swirling of the mesentery. So the management, of course, depends on the clinical presentation and the patient's stability. If they're toxic, if they have peritonitis, if there are signs of ischemia, they need to go straight to the operating room. Most of the time, that's not the case. They're non-toxic. So in the middle of the night, the treatment really is endoscopic decompression. It works very well in the vast majority of cases. And I'll talk a little bit more about the technique, but the recurrence rate following endoscopic decompression is about 40 to 50%, and so they really do need definitive surgery if they're an operative candidate. So endoscopic decompression, obviously contraindicated if you have signs of peritonitis or toxicity, but if not, the way to accomplish this is with gentle insufflation, using predominantly water as opposed to air, and gentle pressure. And most of the time you'll encounter the twist around 25 centimeters from the anal verge, get through it, gush of air and stool, and then you have to take the time to clean all that out so you can evaluate the mucosa and make sure that there's no signs of ischemia. Most of the time, people leave a rectal tube for 1 to 3 days to try to prevent it from detorsing right away. So surgical intervention. Hopefully, you're able to do your endoscopic decompression and then do a bowel prep with oral antibiotics. That will allow, hopefully, the colon to decompress. And then you can consider doing laparoscopy. Now, most of the time, the colon is so redundant that you can perform the vast majority of the operation through the little extraction site that you would use for a laparoscopic repair. So I usually end up just doing a little fan and steal. whether or not you need to do an end-to-end anastomosis with the EEA, or you could do a side-to-side anastomosis, there's no data on that. I had a little concern that with a side-to-side anastomosis, it could revolvulize, but my partner does that routinely and hasn't had that problem. So I think it's dealer's choice there. With regard to in the presence of ischemia, in most cases, the Hartmann's procedure is going to be the most cautious. You want to talk to the patient's families, particularly the institutionalized patients, prior to surgery. You may find that they're struggling with constipation or with fecal incontinence, and it might improve their quality of life, actually, to have an end colostomy. And so you want to have those discussions with them ahead of time so that you're better able to serve them in the operating room. Other alternatives is sigmoidopexy or mesosigmoidopexy. This is associated with 20 to 30% recurrence, but it avoids the morbidity of a resection. The theory here is not unlike a pyloroplasty, where you open that peritoneal covering overlying the mesentery longitudinally, and then you close it transversely, and that widens the mesentery. One novel approach, particularly in the patients that are not a surgical candidate, is endoscopic fixation. And that's basically just doing a peg through the colon. And what that allows is for the colon to be fixed to the abdominal wall. And you leave it there for several months, and then potentially you can remove the tube and it keeps the colon fixed there. Again, this wouldn't be for somebody that's an operative candidate, but for a frail individual, this might offer a good choice. Cecal volvulus, the incidence seems to be increasing. It's more prevalent in younger patients, particularly women. It's more likely to be more acute in onset than sigmoid volvulus, and there's a slightly higher rate of ischemia. The evaluation's similar here on the x-ray. You can see the large distended colon with a paucity of air in the right upper quadrant. Again, you see the same whirl sign on CT indicative of a volvulus. The management here is pretty straightforward. Endoscopic decompression is not effective. It's not recommended. And so these patients need operative intervention. Obviously, if you find ischemia, it needs to be resected, and then just need to use your judgment as to whether or not to perform a primary anastomosis with a proximal diversion, or simply an ileostomy. Also, cecopexy and cecostomy tubes have been described. Again, a less morbid than a resection, but should most likely be reserved for the frail patient that you're concerned couldn't tolerate a resection. So moving on to colon ischemia, just to change topics. This is the most common form of intestinal ischemia, and in 95% of the cases, it's due to a non-occlusive mechanism. And that's because the colon is relatively hyperperfused relative to the rest of the GI tract. It's predominantly affected in the left side, where there's a watershed areas, the splenic flexure, the rectosigmoid junction. You do have, in 5% of the cases, ischemia due to arterial occlusion, either embolic or thrombotic, but you oftentimes have associated small bowel ischemia. And then also mesenteric vein thrombosis, which I see frequently in patients with chronic inflammatory conditions, so Crohn's disease or untreated smoldering diverticulitis, sometimes they can present with mesenteric vein thrombosis. It's also not uncommon to happen after surgery, particularly a total colectomy. Most of these cases can be treated conservatively with anticoagulation, and you need to consider a hypercoagulability workup, particularly if there's no inciting event. So risk factors for non-occlusive colon ischemia, the primary one is aortoiliac surgery, which has a risk in ruptured AAA of about 9%. Also, patients undergoing cardiopulmonary bypass, there's about a 4 to 5% incidence of colonic ischemia. Patients on hemodialysis, there's certain drugs, medications that can cause it, and then extreme exercise. So just a couple scenarios. This was a patient we had back in December, 71 years old, interestingly enough, had a history of anal cancer and had received radiation in the distant past, but had developed an expanding juxtarenal AAA and underwent a fenestrated endovascular repair and really just crumped on postoperative day number two. They rushed her right down to the scanner, did a CTA, and that was normal. The graft looked fine and everything was normal. This is not uncommon early in the stages of colonic ischemia. They wanted GI to scope the patient, but the patient hadn't had any hematochezia or anything like that, so GI was hesitant, so they called us and we scoped the patient. And you can see here these bluish hemorrhagic nodules that are just very classic for colon ischemia. You could also get edema, granular mucosa, ulceration. And in the setting this patient was unstable, we took her to the operating room and had to do a total proctocolectomy. So what is the incidence of colonic ischemia after aortic surgery? And this was a really nice paper done by Scott Steele and Jason Perry, who would subsequently become our vascular fellow at UVA, looking at 9,000 AAA repairs through the national inpatient sample. And what they found was the highest risk of ischemia was associated with repair of a ruptured AAA, as one would expect, 8 to 15%. It was relatively rare even after open elective AAA, 1 to 2%, and only 0.5% with endovascular repair, and that's likely due to less hypoperfusion. And then you can also get frequent type 2 leaks with lumbars perfusing the leak and can be perfusing the IMA as well. So in this situation, early recognition is key. Only 36% of them required surgery, but when they did, the mortality was very high. There used to be some thought that these patients should routinely undergo flexible sigmoidoscopy, you know, once a day after surgery, or excuse me, after the repair of the aneurysm. But based on this literature, I don't think routine endoscopy is necessary, but you should have a very low threshold to proceed in any post-op patient that's not acting right. So the management of ischemic colitis is obviously dependent on the patient presentation. If it's mild, the patient's hemodynamically stable, then they can be treated conservatively with fluid resuscitation and IV antibiotics. Obviously, if there's high severity of illness or acuteness, patient needs to go to the operating room and the ischemic portions need to be resected back to microscopic healthy margins. Most of the time, patients are left in discontinuity. And then a second look procedure is performed about 24 hours later. At that time, I think it's most prudent to bring up an ostomy. Just to finish up, there's another scenario of colonic ischemia, which is much less well understood, and I see fairly commonly, and that is the healthy patient. This was a patient I cared for about 2 years ago, 51 years old, totally healthy, hadn't been exercising like crazy, just showed up with crampy abdominal pain and tenesmus, and was initially treated for several months for Crohn's disease. Before he finally got transferred to us. This is a CT scan showing significant inflammation and thickening of the rectum. Also had a leukocytosis. And this was the flexible sigmoidoscopy, and you can see it looks ischemic. The pathology was ischemic. This is oftentimes associated with no inciting events. It's oftentimes misdiagnosed with Crohn's. And the way to really determine it is based on the pathologic findings. You can oftentimes see this target sign. Initially supportive management, this patient had been supportively managed for several months, and what I ended up doing is I did a loop ileostomy on him just to allow him to get over this acute episode with hopes of trying to salvage the rectum. He had about 2 or 3 centimeters of normal rectum below this. And as one would expect, what happened is it strictured down, but then the distal part of the rectum was healthy, so I went back and was able to do a segmental resection. And you want to think about the next operation. So I was able to do the loop ileostomy up front, so it didn't interfere with the reconstruction options. I was able to just leave it to protect this anastomosis and then subsequently get rid of that ileostomy, and it worked out very nicely. So, you know, in summary, it's pretty straightforward. Sigmoid volvulus, best treated in the middle of the night with endoscopic decompression, cecal volvulus with surgery, and then, of course, colonic ischemia, hopefully mild and can be treated conservatively. If not, needs fully resected. Thank you.